Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
this is a little different. This is a pre-recorded segment. We'll be back early 2017 for the new year on our live feed. Our live show is on Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. New time, not a new day, but a new time here for me and Felipe Leon. And at the same time, we're going to be doing some little short segments that we want to post on YouTube, try to get the fans involved, and then have something to talk about on the coming week of Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. So let's get down straight to it here, Felipe. Andy Ruiz Jr. was a questionable heavyweight. We knew he had talent. We knew he was a guy that, you know, could let his hands go, put combinations fairly well, but we didn't know how good he was. He goes down to New Zealand to face Joseph Parker, and I got to tell you, very, very competitive fight in terms of what we know now of Andy Ruiz Jr., but he got this short end of the stick. The cards that tallied up later on after the fight, the 12 rounds of combat between both of those guys, was 114-114, 115-113, and 115-113, all by the way of judges here, had swayed it for Joseph Parker, man. What are your thoughts about this? I honestly got to tell you, I thought Andy Ruiz did enough to win the exchanges when they got heated. And to me, it just showed that he was kind of more of the dictator of the fight, where Joseph Parker was kind of the guy that tried to be skirmish and not, you know, take any dangerous he didn't want to be dangerous at any point, you know what I mean? He just wanted a box beautiful, and it just wasn't beautifully done in my part. In my eyes, it just wasn't enough for him to take the title.
I agree with you, David. It was a very competitive fight. You know, Andy Ruiz probably deserved a little bit better since he did go down to New Zealand and fight in the hometown of the now WBO heavyweight champion, Joseph Parker. But I actually scored the fight, and I scored it a draw. I think that Joseph Parker controlled the action a little bit better with that jab, although Andy Ruiz at moments was able to get on the inside and score, and possibly did score the harder punches, but I think that Joseph Parker just scored more and was more effective in, you know, pushing his type of fight, especially in the middle rounds, and I think he was able to take it. I think that if you put a gun to my head, I would probably, and told me I had to choose a winner, I would choose Joseph Parker. I don't think at any point did Andy Ruiz actually win the fight, but I do see the draw happening. And, you know, by the scores, 115-113 twice, Joseph Parker won by a very slim margin. So, you know, if these are the elite, if these two guys are part of the elite heavyweight division that we now have with, you know, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, the winner of it, Povetkin, and Bermaine Stiverne, you know, Andy Ruiz is right up there with them. I mean, it was a competitive fight. He only lost by a couple points on the judges' scorecards that he did lose. So I think he does deserve a rematch, but it's going to be tough to bring Joseph Parker out of New Zealand Andy Ruiz do it here.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think Joseph Parker is going to want to even try to attempt the rematch right now, because there's just bigger there's bigger turkeys out there to fry. Why go back and be reminded that you're being boxed by smaller? Let me ask you this about
Andy Ruiz. Listen to this. Now, you say there are they're bigger turkeys there, but those bigger turkeys are probably going to be more competitive than Andy Ruiz. So now why not take one other payday there in New Zealand against a guy that you already beat, that you could probably beat again, before you go after the Anthony Parkers or the Deontay Wilders?
Yeah, but see, now you're making sense. And in boxing, for some reason, making sense is not the sensible way of going about setting your fighters up. You know what I mean? And I looking at Andy Ruiz, I got to say this, man, is that the curse that Andy Ruiz brings to the table is that he's just a very small guy. It's almost like, are we even really sure he belongs in that division? Does he really belong in that division? I mean, here's a guy that okay, it's not like a Chris Denimer Oriella. Oriella was a big guy, right? it really worked for him because he had power behind his punches. So you knew that some punches were going to land, they were going to hurt his opponent, you were going to see him rock. But with Ruiz, man, it's just like he's got to have the perfect fight every time around, right?
The question here for me, yeah, Andy Ruiz is too small for that weight class. I mean, obviously, you know, he's fast. He knows what he's doing. He has a lot of experience as an amateur and now as a professional, not so much as a professional, but, you know, some experience as a professional, just suffered his first loss in a championship fight. But really, what weight class would he be if he actually dropped all that weight? I mean, when you actually saw him, you know, like a regular fighter, you know, like a guy that the skin is going to stick to his muscle and his bones. I mean, what do you think he is, like a 168-pounder, 160-pounder? I mean,
no.
Really.
I mean, that's the curse that he has, is that he has no choice but to stay at the heavyweight division. But
well, it's not so much a curse. It's a life choice. I mean, the guy, I mean, if he really wanted to, he would drop the weight. But, I mean, that's not something he wants to do.
I don't know. You know, I mean, because there's just some people that – just can't physically take that weight off. I mean, I got to say, I mean, he's up at Big Bear at the summit with Abel Sanchez, and I've heard the regimen's pretty tough. I heard that, you know, you have to follow what everybody else is doing and play keep up, or you're not going to be in that camp. So I just think that you have a guy here that no matter what he does, it's just very hard for him to lose the extra fat that's around the muscle, because even in this heavyweight championship fight, I never kind of really got the sense that he was tiring out. You know what I mean? He almost seemed to have the same type of motor skills of going forward and being this locomotive in a certain very small locomotive, in the sense of the way Cristian Namorello was. You know, he was a guy that didn't have a very physique looking heavyweight type body that we're used to looking at, but he also didn't lack the stamina to keep up with the guys that are more physically more primed in body-wise than they are. And Andy Ruiz just is up there in that sense that he could keep up with these guys, but he just doesn't carry the size and the power. Now, he could place the punches where he wants, what I thought was a beautiful thing that he did against Joseph Parker, and he's got a good chin. But I just sat there and go, man, this really sucks for Andy Ruiz Jr. because he seems just to be not in the weight division he should be. Because if he was at any other weight division, like 168, or even a light heavyweight, or even pushing a cruiserweight, you have the you're leaning and believing that he would be a real, real force to be reckoned with in those other lower weight divisions.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that he would be very much more competitive. I mean, he fought a Joseph Parker here. Joseph Parker was a little bit taller than him. And Joseph Parker, you know, his body type is not an Anthony Joshua. It's not a Vladimir Klitschko. It's not a Deontay Wilder. So how would Andy Ruiz, you know, if he wants to stay at this level in this division, he's going to have to fight those guys. If he wants to fight for another world title at some point, he might have to fight these guys. And how is he going to compete with those kind of guys, with an Anthony Joshua who is as big, if not bigger, than Vladimir Klitschko, or a Tyson Fury, or even a Huey Fury who he was scheduled to fight with against a couple of months ago? That guy's size-wise and height-wise, he's huge. You know, and here he was fighting Joseph Parker, probably, I wouldn't say the guy closest to his body type, but if you use relative terms and you compare Joseph Parker to an Anthony Joshua or a Klitschko or a Deontay Wilder, as far as height and muscle mass, you know, Joseph Parker was the closest thing Andy Ruiz was going to find, you know, in the heavyweight champs. And, you know, by a certain extent, he got beat by the difference in height and muscle mass and body type. So, you know, what's he going to do from here in that weight class? I just don't know.
Well, here's the thing, too, is if you're a Joseph Parker fan, how disappointed are you in your guy, seeing that he was being pushed around in a much smaller heavyweight guy that didn't carry a whole lot of punch, but was outpointing you in my eyes when they decided to stand and trade? It was Joseph Parker that was getting the short end. He was the guy that was getting clipped a lot, and he was also the guy pulling out at every exchange. Didn't want to stay in that heat circle with Andy Ruiz Jr. It just seemed to me that Joseph Parker didn't dare to try to even oppose his size and Andy Ruiz. I think he figured, you know what, this guy knows how to put his punches together. This guy's going to let his hands go, and he can take a punch. But I don't even know at what point he got that sense, because it seemed like from the very first minute of the round, Felipe, this guy was already – it was already instilled in his head, hey, back up, try to use your jab and try to stay at a distance and never get your chin in danger with Andy Ruiz Jr. Joseph Parker, shame on you. You should have tested the waters. It was there for the taking.
No, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you whatsoever in that. One thing that if you would have noticed in the lead-up to this fight is that Parker's team had a lot of respect for Andy Ruiz. They knew what he had done in the amateurs. And I don't know if you know this about Andy Ruiz, but he was a highly decorated amateur. I think, I might be mistaken, but I think he only lost like 5 times in the amateurs, and he had over 100 fights, decorated amateur, you know. And the Parker team knew that, and they had a lot of respect for Andy Ruiz. And
listen,
if you remember...
That means diddly to a certain point.
If you remember, they had sparred with each other, and Andy Ruiz had gotten the better of it. Joseph Parker admitted to that. So now you're in the ring with the guy. You know that the only thing that the guy can do to beat you is to get on the inside. So why would you mix it up? You're going to stay on the outside. You're going to use that jab. You're going to move laterally. And you're going to stay away because you're going to win that heavyweight title. Once you win that heavyweight title, then – you got the big bucks coming. You got to do what you got to do. So why in the world are you going to give Andy Ruiz a chance to use his best strategy in front of you? That's ridiculous.
Well, here's what's ridiculous is the fact that you know already, you're familiar with the guy. I believe you on that. But at the same time, when you're familiar with that person and you're sparring is sparring, fighting is fighting. He should have tested that water, should have seen that if whether or not his weight and his muscle can overpower Andy Ruiz and weigh him down, tire him out. He never allowed him, allowed himself to do that. Wait, hold on. If you have a guy that's smaller and you know that he's got to put a little bit more, his foot on the pedal of the gas to go forward, well, what you want to do is go right up against him to tire him out. He never did that. So Andy Ruiz was able to fight his pace, was able to do the things he wanted to do because Joseph Parker showed too much respect. I get it. You give the guy the respect because you're familiar with him. But there's got to be a point where you kind of have to let the respect just leave the ring, and you got to impose your will against the guy that's in front of you.
That guy busted up your mouth in your sparring session. I mean, you know the guy can hit. Why are you going to stand in front of him? You know, why are you going to give him that opportunity? I mean, I see what you're saying. Let's test the waters. But, hey, it's win this fight and look better in the next one. And Joseph Parker did exactly that. So he stayed with the strategy. He did what he needed to do. It wasn't a boring fight. It was a good fight. It was one of the most entertaining fights and possibly one of the most competitive fights of the weekend. I'm not going to say it was the most, but one of them. Why give Andy Ruiz more of an advantage?
I tell you why. I'm going to give you the reason why. Because the most talk right now about this competitive fight is the scorecards and how a lot of people feel that, no, the talk is still Andy Ruiz. The talk is still about Andy Ruiz Jr. It's not about Joseph Parker. It's about Andy Ruiz Jr. What does he do next?
Well, that's because we're in the United States. But, I mean, right now, I'm sure Joseph Parker is, you know, the second coming of Jesus Christ in New Zealand. So, you know, that's because we're in the United States and Andy Ruiz is stationed out of here, you know, out of the United States. He's trained by, obviously, quite possibly, arguably the trainer of the year, Abel Sanchez. So, yeah, we're hearing all the side from Andy Ruiz. But I'm sure that in New Zealand, where Joseph Parker lives and is important, he's the talk of the town.
Maybe so, man. But let's move on forward. Let's talk about our next subject here. So let me give you the rundown. Let me just give you the straight down list. And then I have one honorable mention person, but that honorable mention has to go into effect in order to be added to the list. The boxing's biggest douchebag, number 4. We'll go from
it's
4
for the
all
week.
The way to 1.
For the week, I would imagine. Cause,
right.
You know,
well, for the month.
If there's one thing about boxing, there's no risk of running out of douchebags, so go ahead.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to go from the top 4 all the way down to the number 1 slot, okay? It obviously doesn't have to go in that order. You guys can obviously pick to see who is the biggest douchebag in boxing for this week here on Leaving the Ring. So number 4 right now on the list of the boxing's biggest douchebag.
Bullshit!
Eso es lo que te
¡Oh,
tú,
Miguel Cotto is going to be facing on pay-per-view on HBO against some who would consider a shot fighter in James Kirtland. Now, the report is that Anne Wolfe is going to be on his corner, but at the same time, here's a guy that just got knocked out by Saul Canelo Alvarez in
that,
a very horrible fashion. He got laid out.
That just got knocked out. It was about a year and a half ago.
Right.
So
right.
But
he got laid out. I mean, come on. But the effect, though, the way he's looked before, he hasn't looked great. Okay, so year and a half, you know, how time flies. But still, the guy was laid out cold. Hasn't looked very good ever since. Hasn't really been active in the sport. And for Miguel Cotto to pick him out, it seemed to piss off a lot of folks. So that's number four, okay? And then we'll go down our rundown of of our opinions about it, okay? Number two. It's Erison Lara, 154-pound champion, super welterweight champion, is going to be facing an inactive Yuri Foreman. Here's a guy that was calling out Triple G and everybody else, even wanting to rematch with Canelo, and at one time was calling out Floyd Mayweather, is facing a guy that hasn't been active. I mean, when was the last time that Yuri Foreman fought? And Laura just got off of a pretty tough, good kind of competitive fight, a fight that nobody wanted to see again in a rematch against Vons Modrosian. And he had his win over him. So that's the number three pick on the slot of boxing's biggest douchebag. Number two.
Bullshit.
Number two, and I have to say Terrence Crawford. He's getting sentenced to a 90-day stint from, and out of those 90 days sentenced to him by a judge, he'll probably be doing, 50 to 53 days in jail because of what he did back over there at his home state, right in Nebraska. And here's a guy that kind of blamed the media about what was said and what was, you know, about the whole incident that he had against a guy of a shop owner, right? It was mechanic shop owner. He went in there, wanted his vehicle, didn't want to pay for it, and then his buddies tried to take it down, and it just stirred up all kinds of stuff. So there was obviously some shop damage, right? And the cost of the vehicle, the guy, doing some labor work to the vehicle. So that's our number two. Our number one.
Bullshit.
I would have to put down is the Charlo twin, his reaction to his KO over Julian J-Rock after that nasty uppercut, right hand that landed perfectly pinpointed on the chin of Julian, lays him out. He gets back up. I give it a chin. I mean, he got up, but his bearing wasn't there. His legs were really wobbly, and Charlo jumped all over him and just putting him back on the canvas. But immediately after that, his reaction was, you know, he was cursing at Julian. He was really upset about J-Rock and saying that, you know, you disrespected me. You disrespected me through Twitter and social media. And when J-Rock decided to go over there and congratulate Charlo for his win over himself, being, you know, knocked him out, right? He was trying to be a classy kid. Charlo just basically shrugged him off, told him no. So that's the number one. I think our honorable mention, though, is what?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I think our honorable mention is going to be Andre Ward, saying that if he can, there's no agreement with the rematch with Sergey Kovalev, that he's thinking about, he's happy with his career, and he's got some heavy thoughts about retirement. So which one do you want to pick here? Which one do you think should be the top of all the lists of the people, the participants we just mentioned right now for the boxing's biggest douchebag?
Okay, let me see here. Because Lara facing Yuri Foreman, I mean, how much power does he have? I mean, he hasn't fought in some months. All of a sudden, he picks up the phone. It's Al Haymon. He's surprised that Al Haymon, well, it's not going to be Al Haymon, but somebody from Al Haymon. So he's surprised that they're even calling him because they haven't answered his call for months. And then they say, hey, we got a fight for you. It's going to be in January, and you're fighting Yuri Foreman. If we think Erislandis Lara is as competitive as he should be, and he's calling out Golovkin, he's calling up this and that, I mean, obviously he wants to protest, but if he says, no, I don't want to fight that guy, I want to fight somebody better, well, guess what? You're going to sit down for a couple more months for talking back, you know? So
right.
We really can't blame Lara for the choosing of Yuri Foreman. I mean, that's more of a higher-up type of choice, but that is ridiculous. I mean, the douchebag there should be the TV executive that's accepting their fight for their airwaves. The same thing with Cotto. Yeah. Couldn't find anybody to fight him. You know, finally gets James Kirkland. The fact that they're making this on a pay-per-view, I mean, it's ridiculous. At a catchweight, 153 pounds. But like Steve Kim said on his on a couple articles he's written on his show, is that we rather have the $10 million that Cotto's going to get paid or what would have to get paid from the HBO budget. We'd rather for it to go from a pay-per-view pay than from, you know, actually from the HBO budget, because HBO is not looking all too busy in the first quarter of 2017. So this ends the contract with HBO and Cotto. So that is not that big of a douchebag move.
But it's forgivable. It's forgivable, right? I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with
Charlo,
you.
I mean, it's fine. I mean, people are passionate. People are heated. There was a lot of talk between them before the fight. Charlo, obviously, the adrenaline pumping. I mean, that was a perfectly placed punch. I mean, he nearly picked him off his feet with that uppercut. So I'm sure that he was pumped. Adrenaline was going. So you can't really blame him for reacting. So to me, the douchebag is Terrence Crawford. You know, whatever the circumstances were with this body shop, his car was there. It needed to get paid for. I think the bill was like $1,500 that he needed to get paid for. The guy goes in there as a thug, doesn't want to pay it. His buddy trying to get the car off the lift, damages some equipment. This is a guy that, you know, has a shop, a blue-collar type of dude, and all he wants to do is get paid. So the douchebag goes to Terrence Crawford, but now he's going to have to pay. He made his bed. Now he's going to lay in it because he's going to spend Christmas in the clinker. So, because he's going to be 53 days in jail. So, there you go.
Yeah, major douchebag for that. I mean, you're absolutely right. This guy is coming from a blue-collar background neighborhood, right? And is basically becoming the people's champ out of his home state. And that's what's been promoted as the brand that Top Rank wants to, you know, label this kid over, right, is the blue-collar fighter that is the hometown hero. So didn't really act like a hometown hero the way he responded to a blue-collar guy that owned a shop and just wanted to get his money. Just wanted to get paid.
As far as the honorable mention, Andre Ward, I mean, maybe he's doing us a favor. I mean, not a lot of people are too happy with the way that Andre Ward fights. We don't have to worry about watching him fight on HBO anymore. So maybe instead of calling him a douchebag, maybe we just thank him for his services if he decides to retire and we don't see Andre Ward.
Are you basically saying thank you, douchebag, Andre Ward?
Hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
No, I didn't say that. I'm not anti-Andre Ward. I mean, I enjoy some of his fights, but I'm not either pro-Andre Ward because, you know, sometimes his performances inside the ring do leave something to be desired. So, but if he decides to retire, you know, and he feels that he's ready for that, you know, more power to him.
Well, I mean, he has to officially say he wants to retire, but it is a douchebag move when knowing that the decision was very argumentable, very controversial. You had a lot of people divided in terms of believing who won the fight, right? You thought that Andre Douchebag Ward took the fight. I believe that Sergey the Crusher Kovalev took the fight. So why not?
Sometimes you got to go out on top. I mean, why do you think Juan Manuel Marquez doesn't want to face Manny Pacquiao again? Because he was losing the fight up to that point. Scores the knockout.
He fought the guy four times, though, Felipe. I mean, I think he's warranted.
But every time he lost a fight, every time he fought to a draw, he lost a fight, he would argue up and down whoever listened to him that he won. He won. So he's being
He's a douchebag in so many other different levels, but he's not the douchebag of the week right now. But I hear what you're saying. But at least Andre Ward, I mean, look, if it was three or four fights already, I would say, okay, you know what, I'm not going to really blame you. In terms of where, Juan Manuel Marquez is at. You know, he fought the guy three times, went on the fourth one, and finally he got lucky. You know what I'm saying? It's like the, you know, you keep trying until you finally just get it one time, and then you never come back and play. I understand that move, and it was a douchebag move of never allowing Manny Pacquiao to redeem himself on that horrific KO loss. But this was a close fight, so close enough that even though it didn't generate the numbers, and I think that a lot of people are using that, you know, Andre Ward didn't pull nobody, blah, 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 but it takes two guys to tango, two parties to make things happen. So But I think it generated enough where people want to see the rematch. And Andre Ward, if he decides to say no to the terms of what's on the rematch clause, because that was a big mention on his part, and decides to retire and not face anybody else of note or worth, it's a douchebag move, man. That is a douchebag move.
But that rematch is nearly impossible to make, because the pay-per-view sold 160,000. They paid Andre Ward $5 million. They paid Kovalev, I think it was $2 million. Okay, so let's say they have the rematch again, and they have it a pay-per-view, which of course it's going to be. How much more money do you think it's going to generate? How much many more pay-per-views is going to sell? 200,000 maybe? 225,000? Let's say even it goes to 300,000, okay? You think Andre Ward's going to face Sergey Kovalev again as the champion after the fight that they just had for another $5 million? Hell no. He's going to want twice the money, and the pay-per-view is just not going to generate it. HBO's not going to pay it. Roc Nation is not going to pay it. So who's going to pay Andre Ward the money to fight Sergey Kovalev again?
Well,
it's nearly impossible to make that.
An immediate rematch probably may not happen. In terms of generate or market it, there's a good storyline behind this already, and it's all up to these promoters to play off the storyline. It's their job. The PR guy, the PR people behind the boxing scene, this is when they have to start getting their wheels to spin. This is when they have to do their part, what they have signed up to be in the staff department, right? Which is market, push the fight. So they got to go out there. It's still fresh in a lot of minds of people. They got to go out there. They got to push it. Now, does Andre Ward got to push it? Obviously not. You know, he's not the one that's trying to sell it to the point. It's Sergey Kovalev. So they got to do something. They got what they have to do. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what they got to do. But right now, what we got is, I believe, the number one spot for boxing's biggest douchebag is going to be Terrence Crawford. I still say that Charlo is up on the running. I'm not sure. Folks, you guys want to tweet us and let us know who you think is the bigger douchebag. Is it Terrence Crawford or is it Charlo, one of the twins? Jermell. It's Jermell and Charlo. Let me tell you this. It left a lot of bad taste and a lot of fight fans the way Charlo behaved, bro. I mean, I get it. It was a heated moment. I got a lot of emails. I got to tell you this. I got a lot of emails. A lot of folks believe there was a little bit of steroid rage on his part, because Vance Monterosian was tweeting out, and Vance had kind of been outspoken in terms of letting his fingers do the talking and not doing any interviews. I mean, I've sent out some invitations for him to be on the show. But he took a little blasting against the Charlo twin by saying that they did not want testing. Julian Jackson and his team, who we know is with Snack, which is owned by Victor Conte, they were open and willing and wanting to do some type of testing. It was the Charlo brothers that did not, the Charlo twin, Jermell, who didn't want any testing. So I don't really know if that, I mean, look, some of the research that I've read and seen, and obviously we'd have to get somebody that knows a little bit more about this, but what I've been told, and when I have spoken to different folks that have been involved in the drug enhancement game, is that it's kind of a myth, but not really a myth, when you see that type of rage. I don't know. That's left up for discussion. Was it a douchebag move in his part, the way he reacted? It was very childish. It wasn't very sportsman conduct. And that at that level, yes, in that category we could speak about, I believe, yes, in sportsman category, he didn't live up to the standard of being a graceful guy. You just won the title. You beat a guy that was undefeated, and you beat a very confident guy. What was the guy supposed to not do? You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Felipe? I mean, what is he supposed to – was he supposed to be nice to Charlo? Did he think that was supposed to play into being the nice guy through Twitter or any type of social media? I mean – it's his job to get into your mind to make you believe you can't beat him and that he could beat you easily. So why such the douchebag behavior of being so pissed off at a guy that was playing the natural role of getting in your head?
I mean, I like the fact. I mean, Charlo is being genuine. You know, if he was mad, he didn't like what Williams was saying before the fight. He knocked him out. He was hyped up. He was running on adrenaline. He was upset, you know. I understand the Williams side also, you know, being a sportsman, the fight's over. That's in the past. Like, shake hands. But some people don't let it go. Roberto Duran didn't let it go. I mean, he was pissed all the time. So, and he's considered one of the best, one of the legends in boxing. Not that Charlo is you know, anything close to that. But, you know, he's being genuine. He's acting out his aggression. He's acting out what he felt. He doesn't like him. He doesn't want to be friends with him. He doesn't want to shake his hand. He wears his heart in his sleeve. I say he gets a pass.
Okay, well, there you go, man. Now, here's some big talks, and we all know that, you know, Felipe Leon is a big, big pom-pom wearing guy for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. out of Mexico. When you went over there this past week, right, to go see him fight, and immediately after his fight.
I don't know why you weren't that there, but go ahead.
I got to tell you, boring fight. Here we, I mean,
please.
Listen, okay, let's get straight into it. I should have put Julio Cesar Chavez into the list of boxing's biggest douchebags, but I didn't think it was a very big douchebag move of him calling out Saúl Canelo Álvarez, which would be at a catch weight he's asking for at 165, when he should really be at 168 or 175. And but let me ask you this. Is it a good fight? And what would be the possible reason it wouldn't happen in May, which has been suggested that it should happen in 2017 in May? I got to tell you this really quick. I got to tell you this. Watching them fight this past Saturday, I DVR'd it. I got to tell you, man, he is slow as shit. To me, Canelo puts hands on him, is going to be able to, you know, be the Mexican Floyd Mayweather against a very slow, pondering Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I mean, dude, he didn't look that good. I'm sitting there and I'm like, too many Cheerios and too many blunts for this kid. Take away the 40s. I don't know what he can do. I mean, he could be a Frankenstein in there. He's the Mexican mummy of boxing.
Of course. I mean, did he go from being, you know, Pernell Whitaker to being what he is now, Julio Cesar Jr.? The guy's always been slow. We know that for a fact, and we know
he
that
just
he catches
more slower.
Okay, the guy hasn't been. Let's take you away from doing your dent work, which is what you do for 17 months, and let's see how well you pull a dent in 17 months from today.
Oh, okay? I put some dents in my life, buddy.
He's rusty. He was getting back into the rhythm. He was slower. He was catching a lot of punches with his face, but that's nothing different. That's nothing that we've never seen before. Now, this whole thing with the catch weight, I've seen it on social media. People are saying, oh, well, how do you weigh in at 168 pounds and then you want to fight a guy that was 154 pounds and then, you know, you ask for a catch weight of 165. How does that make sense? Because the fact is that we all know this, we all discussed it, is that Canelo Alvarez, he goes into the ring weighing 173, 174, 175 pounds. I mean,
right,
that's
right.
Fact.
He's a big
just
kid.
Because he doesn't, you know, he's a big kid. He rehydrates and he goes in there. Now, one thing that I did read that Eric Gomez, president of Golden Boy Promotion, stated regarding this fight from the WBC convention in Florida a couple of days ago is that they are very interested in the fight. It's a fight that Saúl Canelo Álvarez is willing to discuss and talk about. But if it does happen, one of the things that they're going to ask for and they're going to negotiate is a rehydration clause. So they weigh at 165. And they can't rehydrate past 173, 174, 175. What's the difference between any of the last three or four fights, five fights that Canelo Alvarez has had? I mean, he went in there weighing nearly 170 pounds against Amir Khan because there was no rehydration clause. So what would be the difference in that? So I don't see it as that far-fetched. I don't see it as that far-fetched.
This is my mama's way rant about this fight here, okay? One thing that a lot of folks like to call out is, what has this guy done to deserve a fight with this person? Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. brings a name. He hasn't really done much of late. He's been off for 17 months. Goes back in. You're absolutely right. It was almost like he was shaking off a lot of ring rust, and he looked just a lot slower. You know, the thing that's frustrating with the kid is that the progress that you see, it's like, okay, it looks like he's starting to get the oil in his wheels and he's starting to spin a little bit, and we might see something a little, you know, more that's been added. But it just right when you think you're at that point, he stops and he makes a U-turn, and he goes back down, you know, back where he came from, right? It goes back with, of course, Gomez, the president of Golden Boy, and of course, Team Canelo would want the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight. Economically, it makes sense.
It's a bigger fight.
It's a big fight.
It's a bigger fight. It's a bigger fight than Canelo Alvarez. Money-wise, it's a bigger fight Canelo Alvarez is Gennady Golovkin. Quite honestly, I believe so.
I believe so, you know, because of all of the all of Latin America is going to want to see that
especially
fight.
Especially if you have it in Texas. And here's the other thing too. Here's the other thing too, guys.
Azteca Stadium. That's where it should be at.
That'd be awesome. But remember, guys. If you're talking about Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. against Saul Canelo Alvarez, guess what you're not talking about? Saul Canelo Alvarez against Gennady Golovkin. And that's one thing that Alvarez wants to stop talking about. Because as you know, and I know, and a lot of people know in our business, it's, you know, the people at Golden Boy have actually gone and spoken to the media and asked not to ask questions about...
Yeah, not to mention...
Gennady Golovkin to Saul Canelo Alvarez. So we're talking about Chavez Jr., and we're not talking about Gennady Golovkin. That's music to Saul Canelo Alvarez's ears.
It's going to be a great sound of change just rolling into his bank account, because it's the title itself. It's, to me, it's a big title. It's going to be a big motion picture with a lot of special effects of the buildup, but it's not going to have a great storyline, because the fact is that I don't think Julio.
What do you mean it doesn't have a?
Well, no. This is what I mean. Is the explosion is going to be an explosion, but it's going to be very quick. You know, it's like one of those movies where you see the best scenes in the trailer. But then when you actually see the movie, it's just like, that was the best. I mean, I already saw these scenes. I mean, this is all you've given me. That, to me, is what the Canelo Alvarez and Julio Cesar Chavez fight would be. I don't think it would be very explosive. Why? Because I think Canelo's too fast for him.
No, listen. I think it's more competitive. Let's talk about what we've seen so far. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has lost two times. He lost to a very mobile and a very good boxer in Sergio Martinez, okay? A guy that used lateral movement, who had quick feet, who threw punches in weird angles, and a Chavez Jr. who may or may not be, depending on who you ask and who you're talking about to, and what maybe wasn't as disciplined as he is now, this new reborn, at least what we've seen in the last 2 or 3 months from Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I mean, say what you will about the guy. Everybody was doubting that he would even make weight. He came in because the actual weight for this fight was at 169 pounds. That's what the contract was signed for. And then I'm serious.
I know. It's just hilarious. You know what I mean? I mean, geez.
But
okay,
that's what
going.
It was.
Good your thought.
And I was there, and prior to the fight, they held conversations with Bridges' team and say, if you guys could come in a little lower, you can, because we're going to come in a little lower, you know? They did that. It wasn't going to be in Bridges' best interest to come in at 169 and for Chavez Jr. to come in 168, because obviously Bridges was a smaller guy. With that said, the other guy that Chavez Jr. has lost against was Fonfara, who was a semi-heavyweight, even though that fight was held at a catch weight of about 172, I believe 173. But the bigger guy in that fight was Fonfara. So you're going to tell me that all of a sudden, like you said, Canelo Alvarez is going to be the Floyd Mayweather, which he's going to be fast. He has faster hands. But when have you ever seen Canelo Alvarez use lateral movement like Sergio Martinez did, and that he has fast feet?
I think
feet.
It's going to be so the first time you're going to see it. I think this will be the first time.
Oh, please. The guy has 50 fights. You don't teach an old dog new tricks. All of a sudden, Canelo Alvarez is going to completely change his style to fight Chavez Jr. He's
oh, man,
gonna
Lorenzo's
going to
fight you tooth and nail in your next segment. I'm telling you right now.
Please, come on. Like, you're expecting Canelo Alvarez to be a completely different fighter.
I'm
he's going to stand there
no.
in front of
listen,
him. He's going to have to stand there in front of him and fight.
Listen, Felipe. Put down the pom-poms for a minute and hear me out, okay? I'm gonna educate you with something right now. It's called boxing. Saul Canelo is going to use combinations. I mean, if you watch what Julio Cesar Chavez did on this past weekend, the guy's a mummy. You know, I mean, he reminds me of a guy that if you're in front of him and you don't throw any punches and you don't know how to – if you don't know how to put your punches in a good place to keep him off of you, he could do what he wants. Canelo Alvarez, you got to give him his props. He knows how to counterpunch, and he won't be there to be hit. He's a lot more light on his feet than he is Julio Cesar Chavez. That you have to agree with me.
I'm not denying that, but you're actually saying that Canelo Alvarez is going to completely change his style. He's going to use lateral movement, and he's going to move in ways that he's never shown before to
he's
be
not
able
to
beat.
Have to use lateral movement. He won't even have to use lateral movement against a slow, very slow. I mean, this is the slowest I've seen Julio so far, you know. And if you're telling me that if they go on his catch weight and they can't rehydrate past what he would want to go, I mean, look at him. He just did not look like a guy that could be fluent. And if he plans to fight in May without doing anything in between that, you're going to see the same performance we just saw this past weekend, a very mummy Mexican fighter in the ring with a Saul Canelo Alvarez.
Well, if they both decide to fight until May, then you're going to have a Canelo Alvarez who has not fought since September, one. Two, a Canelo Alvarez who's coming off a hand injury. And three, a Canelo Alvarez that's going to be fighting, I know, at a higher weight class than he's ever fought before.
Again, a big difference. You have a guy like Saul Canelo Alvarez. You cannot rule it out that this guy is in the gym. The guy does try to practice on the same crap that he's been working on, that he's been doing for past 50 fights. But the fact is that he is an active guy in the gym, whereas Julio Cesar Chavez isn't. In between training camps, he either doesn't show up.
If Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. wants to make 165 pounds by May, he has to take care of himself from here on out, and he has to be in the gym. That's a fact. If he doesn't do that, then he's not going to make that weight, and the fight's not going to happen. So you got to think in those terms. Now, is he going to do it or not? Obviously, a lot of people are not going to believe that he's going to do it, obviously, you know, because of his track record. But
I don't know. I think he does. I think he wants it because I think in – I mean, I don't think. I think we know that Canelo Alvarez's name gets underneath his skin. And I think also, he's still seeking for his dad's approval in some way. You know, he's shown a lot of disrespect in towards of the legacy of his father, the way he's been carrying himself in the ring, right? But I think he still is kind of yearning to get the acceptance, not just from his dad, but also from the Mexican people that he's letting down. What do you think?
Now, I mean, I agree with you to a certain extent. I don't think he's that cerebral about it, and he analyzes it the way that you just put it, you just explained it. But I'm kind of surprised that the talks have gone this far about this fight, because I actually interviewed Chavez Jr. after his fight on Saturday night. And if you guys want to listen to that interview, you guys speak Spanish, you could go on YouTube, which is youtube.com/BoxeoTijuana, and go to our step number 75 show, and you could hear the interview there. And he mentions that he wants a world title. At that moment, right after his fight, maybe about an hour, hour and a half after he got out of the ring, he mentioned in the interview, he said, you know what, I want to fight for a world title, and I want to fight Badu Jack or James DeGale for a world title. I'm open to fighting Canelo Alvarez. I'm open to fighting Gennady Golovkin, but I don't know if those guys are interested in fighting me because, you know, they don't care too much about titles. And I think he was kind of throwing a dig at Saul Canelo Alvarez, not so much as Gennady Golovkin. He said, you know, the way that they negotiate their fights, they don't care so much about titles. And I think that was a dig towards Saul Canelo Alvarez leaving the WBC title vacant as to not face Gennady Golovkin. Obviously, Gennady Golovkin has never done anything of that for, you know, that would suggest that he has left anything for a title. So, but now that the talks are a little bit more serious, now that I think some big money is being offered on the table, I would imagine, then, you know, obviously Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has changed his tune, and this is a big fight. He wants big fights. Saul Canelo Alvarez against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is one of the biggest fights that can be made in boxing right now, you know, with a close second, Canelo Alvarez against Gennady Golovkin, and a close third after that, Chavez Jr. against Gennady Golovkin. So it's a big fight. Obviously, there's some big money being offered. And, you know, from what I hear, it's pretty close. So, I mean, what I've heard is that they're negotiating over a pound.
Right
now, they're negotiating over a pound.
To me, it's a big name versus a big star in Mexico. If Julio, if that fight happens, and if it doesn't, let's say Chavez Jr. goes after Triple G, and they go into talks for that fight, again, it's a big name against a very active, dangerous fighter. That's the way I look at it.
And here's the thing, and to finish off on this subject, and just to let you know what people think about these two fighters in Mexico, Saúl Canelo Álvarez, obviously, to a certain extent, he started in a way of, you know, both are criticized immensely in the United States and in Mexico, but they're criticized for two different reasons. You know, Saúl Canelo Álvarez is criticized because, you know, what he did, because if he left the title on the table, he didn't want to face Gennady Golovkin. A lot of people are stating that he's ducking Gennady Golovkin, and we're going to touch on that subject in our next segment right now. And that's what he's criticized for. Julio César Chávez Jr. has never been criticized for not, you know, some people might say, oh, well, he didn't want to fight Sergio Maravilla Martinez and blah, 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 but he did. He fought him, he lost, he took his loss, and he lost his title. You know, and there's so much politics behind that as far as HBO didn't want to pay for this fight, didn't want to pay for the other fight, this and this, that and that. But what Julio César Chávez Jr. is criticized for most in the press, at least in Mexico, is for the same reasons we do it, the lack of discipline. But never has his heart or his competitiveness or the fact that he wants to fight big names, has that ever been questioned? And that is the biggest question that people have for Saúl Canelo Álvarez when he doesn't want to fight Gennady Golovkin. So you're going to have here, quite possibly, like you mentioned, the biggest Mexican star right now, who is Saúl Canelo Álvarez, against a guy who is tough, who his dad was considered the epitome of toughness in Mexican boxing, and they're going to fight each other, obviously with Saúl Canelo Álvarez being the favorite, but I don't think this is a walk in the park for either of them. I don't think this is a blowout. I don't think Saúl Canelo Álvarez walks all over him. You know, Chávez Jr. is going to go in there and he's going to fight. So, you know, is Álvarez the favorite? Yeah, I think he's the favorite, but it's not a walk in the park.
I agree. It's not a walk in the park. All right, now, Oscar De La Hoya, who was on ESPN First Take, which is with, what is his name, Stephen Smith and Max Kellerman, at the end of the segment, Stephen A. Smith asks Oscar De La Hoya, promoter of Golden Boy Promotions, is Saúl Canelo Álvarez finally going to step in the ring with Triple G, Gennady Golovkin? And Oscar said yes, it's going to happen in 2017, September. He promises that if they sign the contract, that it should go that way. It should lead into that fight between those two in September. Now, I don't know, Felipe, when I hear contract, if they sign that contract, it almost goes back into what the argument was prior, why it didn't happen the first time. They wanted Triple G to sign a certain contract that was it was not feasible for them. It didn't make any sense. It was basically telling them you're the speck of the guy. You know, you're basically what Miguel Cotto has used against other folks is that I'm the A fighter and you're the B fighter situation. So I think that's the only thing in terms of what could get back in the way of this fight happening in September. What are your thoughts?
Look, I think that the gist of this whole situation was actually put as a question by Max Kellerman, which was that follow-up to that statement by Oscar De La Hoya on this show, where Oscar said, you know, if they sign the contract, you know, that's all we are waiting for with this big, you know, Colgate Oscar De La Hoya smile, you know, that smile that, you know, charms everybody. But Max Kellerman said to him, hey, well, that's something that we've seen before in boxing. You make an offer, the offer is quite possibly not that good, and then, you know, we don't have a fight because, you know, the offer is not what people – what it's a good offer. And Oscar De La Hoya said, well, you know, it's a great offer. I think it's a great offer for both fighters, and, you know, all we're waiting for is to sign the contract. Okay, that's good and dandy. But the thing is this. To me, Gennady Golovkin has been asking for this fight. He wants this fight. He knows that this is the biggest fight that he can make as of right now with Canelo Alvarez to make some money, okay? I don't think that Gennady Golovkin has any qualms. I don't think he has any reason not to want to face Saúl El Canelo Álvarez. So if the offer was anywhere remotely fair and made sense to Tom Loeffler and Gennady Golovkin, who have admittedly stated over and over that they do understand that Saul Canelo Alvarez is the A side in this equation. If the offer was anywhere remotely, you know, somewhat fair, I would think they would take it and they would have signed it by now. You know, so the fact that they have not signed it, that the negotiations are still ongoing, and that the fight has not been made, has something to say to that effect. You know, that is my opinion. Obviously, Saul Canelo Alvarez is the bigger star. Obviously, he deserves more of the pie. I think that Tom Loeffler and the Gennady Golovkin side recognize that. But you can't just make an offer, and if they don't sign it, you know, they're the ones that don't want the fight. I mean, they could have offered him $200,000. Hey, we made an offer. Obviously, he doesn't deserve just $200,000. You know, obviously, we don't know the details. We don't know the offer. This whole eight-figure type of offer, come on. You know, it's ridiculous. I believe that Tom Loeffler and Gennady Golovkin are smart businessmen, and if the offer was anywhere remotely fair, that they thought that that's as good as it was going to get, they would have taken it by now, and obviously we haven't seen that yet.
No argument out of me with that one there, man. I agree with you all the way about that. Hope it happens. The only thing also I could see getting in the way is if the serious talks between Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and Canelo Alvarez happens in May. And you, like you said, it's no walk in the park. It could take a toll on Canelo if it is a tough physical fight, not just with the with negotiations that could put a roadblock, but it also about recoup. He needs to recoup his
body. Let's say this about Canelo, though. I mean, and I remember, I think it was on a couple of episodes from the next round, Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya were talking about, you know, that 1999 year of Oscar La Hoya, where he fought Obar Kaur, Ike Corte, and Felix Tito Trinidad. You know, that was a huge year for Oscar La Hoya, cemented him, proved that he was willing to fight anybody that they put in front of him. Now imagine that Oscar De La Hoya really go for a big year for Canelo, and they put him in against David Lemieux in February or March, against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. in May, and against Gennady Golovkin in September.
Yeah, to finish the
year. That's a huge that equals that type of year that Oscar had. You know, in 1999.
That erases a lot of doubt of what people think about Canelo, to tell you the truth.
And if Alvarez beats Lemieux, beats Chavez Jr. and loses to Gennady Golovkin, you can't really say anything bad about the guy, because it's exactly what happened to Oscar. I mean, even though his loss was controversial against Tito Trinidad, but Oscar didn't lose any shine by losing to Tito Trinidad in that year in 1999.
That's what fighters do. That's what a lot of these fighters right now don't understand, is that fighters fight. You don't win them all, but at least you get in there and you try. There's no such thing as fantasy boxing. Nobody does fantasy boxing. I don't even care to talk about fantasy boxing. I see a lot of folks that try to, you know, draw me in. They'll tag my name on social media, and they see that I never respond to it. And I'll get emails, and they'll be like, hey, what do you think about it? And I say, I don't do fantasy boxing. To me, it's a waste of time. You could go on and on and on of what if this and what if that. The fact is that you don't get hard, concrete evidence or facts of what could happen in the ring until they get in there and they actually mix it up. Here on Leaving the Ring, like I said, in the new year, we'll be active. We'll be a lot more active than we have been with myself, Dave Duenas here, 97 Rough, and Felipe Leon. And I hope you guys enjoyed this little segment here. We're going to be doing a little bit of this here and there, but we'll be continuing the Leaving the Ring on Wednesday nights at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. Felipe, like always, brother, it was a pleasure. Until the next time, talk to you soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the pound-for-pound best radio show around the world, it's Leave It in the Ring.
But the real fight fans, I'm talking about, if you're tuning in and listening and Leaving in the Ring right now, you're a real fight fan, okay? Because this is what hardcore fight fans do. We want to talk about boxing consistently. It's a 24-hour thing. It's not a sport to us. It's a lifestyle.